Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. During the COVID-19 pandemic, there has been a new rising. In home kitchens, bread baking and eating have been on the rise. For me, bread has always represented comfort. Bread browning in the toaster highlighted my mornings. Peanut butter and jelly spread between two slices of bread fueled my lunches. And now, bread baking in my oven brings calm and happy. In this show, I talk to Asano Otsu of Samurai Sue's Everyday Foods in Red Lodge, who bakes up sourdough breads for Moon Lake Market and the Yellowstone Valley Food Hub. Then, inspired from photos from Facebook, we talk to, from Billings, Ann Jackson Eaton, Sarah James, and John Pierce, who successfully made bread for the first time. We begin with Samurai Sue's Everyday Foods, where bread has been baked up for the last 2 years. By phone, I am talking to Asano Otsu, owner and founder of Samurai Sue's Everyday Food and Red Lodge. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me. This is great.
Well, I first discovered your breads through the Yellowstone Valley Food Hub. The Food Hub is a co-op servicing Yellowstone County and nearby surrounds. I knew I was enamored with your bread when you started baking the Shokupan sourdough milk bread. The bread reminds me of my aunt in San Francisco who used to bring the bread from a San Francisco bakery. But before we jump into this, how are you holding up during this COVID-19 pandemic?
Oh, it's hard for everybody, right? Small business and, you know, just life-changing moments for everybody. I think this is such an unprecedented time. But I have been really fortunate in just getting lots and lots of support from the community, Red Lodge specifically, but through the Yellowstone Valley Food Hub network, I've increased some sales for bread there. Some of my big wholesale accounts have canceled just because we're not supposed to gather up in mass and make non-essential trips all the time. Those lost sales made up in small quantities from family support, friend support. So I've really been fortunate. And I'm also really fortunate that I work by myself. I didn't have to deal with
employees.
Yeah, that's been a really hard thing for me to see in the food industry, that folks who tend to be paycheck to paycheck have lost all their shifts. And so I'm fortunate that I didn't have to deal with that situation as business owner. At the same time, everybody who has been affected has been really close to my heart.
Yeah, me too. A samurai in Japanese culture is a warrior. So a samurai represents honesty, loyalty, commitment, duty, and all those really great things. Why did you name your business Samurai Sue's Everyday Food?
You know, I'll just stick with what you just said. Can I steal that from you?
Yes, absolutely.
No, it's actually a combination of a couple of nicknames that I've had in my former life as outdoor educator. In college and right out of college, I worked for Our Bound Wilderness. I was really into mountaineering, climbing, rock climbing, all those things. I got to hike for a living. People from all over the world, from all walks of life. It was the greatest job I've had. And I still glean from that lifestyle what I'm doing. Hard work and work ethic and keeping things simple. That group of colleagues, outdoor education world, we all called each other by last name. So somehow Otsu became Sue. Like, it's already short, but some people started calling me Sue. Like, they couldn't add another syllable or something.
I see.
So that's where Sue came from. And around the same time, I had a really old Toyota 4Runner that just loose pieces everywhere I drove. Like, it was just held together by duct tape kind of truck. But we used to call that car Samurai.
I see.
And it's just kind of homage to my good times that I've had.
The good times Asano experienced as a child was on the land of the rising sun in Kyoto.
I grew up in Japan until I was 13, so about 7th grade, I think. And I had an opportunity to come over here for a one-year exchange program.
Oh, fantastic.
In Colorado.
Okay.
And friends and mutual friends, family hosted me. And after that first year, I said, I don't think I ever want to go back. And fortunately, I haven't had to. And my family still lives in Japan. My original food background comes with my grandmother. She was a cook, and she taught cooking out of her home when I was little, and my mom was one of her students with her college buddies. So that type of story, like I just kind of grew up around it. And my mom has taken that up as well. So I was born into the matriarch of cooks around our home. But I think I try to avoid it because I knew that it's such a hard work. And it was always around when I visited in the summertime. I would help in the kitchen or clean, scrub the floors. I sort of avoided it, and I went off and did hour-bound stuff. And then when I settled into Red Lodge, I was able to work lots of different jobs. But somehow, food always kept calling me back. So my latest stint was with Mastaco, with Chef Mike Muirhead. And he's been a great mentor of mine for cooking. And he taught me a lot about small business ownership and running a small restaurant in Red Lodge.
When Asana was beginning her business, it was right at the height of gluten intolerant awareness. Bread was pushed aside at the dining room table. But with recent interest in bread baking and eating, some tolerance may be on the rise.
The bread that I make is really gluten intolerant friendly, I think, because it's all sourdough.
Mm-hmm.
So the word for it is pre-digested. And the sourdough culture breaks down some of the gluten for you before you even eat it. So I think it's really friendly to folks who are sensitive to gluten. I do mix 4 different types of flour, so it's flavorful and it's not just white flour. I think that's one of the silver linings from the pandemic, that folks are enjoying cooking more. And
yeah.
I'm glad that folks are discovering my bread through this movement.
Well, and bread, I think, just represents comfort and safety. And it always is something that just tastes good. And I'm glad that during this time, they are discovering your bread. Where does your sourdough come from?
So I'm very lucky. I've had kept the sourdough culture that I started with a friend of mine several years ago.
And did you?
Around the time I was starting up my business, I was gifted a really old culture from Moon Lake Market owner Terry.
Okay.
So it's a combination of my own quote unquote newer culture that I started probably about 5 years ago with the culture that Terry gave me. In my 2-year journey of operating this business, I've had lots of different strains kind of come through my hands. So it's a combination.
No, yeah. I love that. It's the continuing of life. It's the sharing of culture. It's just that exchange, which is really amazing about sourdough. So your background, do you have a baking background?
You know, I really don't. I've been teaching myself through really online. Instagram has so many different techniques and video tutorials, a lot of great online resources. I've read several books on baking.
And who
it's
have
really been,
trial
fire.
Who have been some of those authors that have inspired you?
I started with King Arthur Flour website, which is a really good website. And it teaches you a lot of great basics, like you're supposed to weigh your flour instead of just scooping it out into cups and mixing flour types. So through that website, I discovered a sourdough phenom. His name is Maurizio. And then he's got a ton of followers on Instagram, too. So he's been a good inspiration. Oh, and then another inspiration, it's not a book author, but a local person. Were you around in Red Lodge when we had the bakery, the Hill Roaring Bakery?
It's been a while.
8 years, 10 years ago, probably.
Yes.
But the master baker there, Heidi, we've gotten back in touch, and she's been mentoring me quite a bit. Really been fortunate to learn from so many people.
Tell the listeners about the other part of your business, because you're making meals and sandwiches and various different things.
Yeah, it's sort of typical me. I don't really know how to focus myself sometimes. And I really wanted to bake my own bread to make specialized sandwiches. And then that ended up getting bigger than I thought. I do make 3 different kinds of sandwiches and 2 different kinds of what I call grain bowls.
Mm-hmm.
One is yakitori grain bowl. Yakitori stands for grilled chicken. And I marinate those in 5-spice marinade. Yakitofu grain bowl. And it's sort of like you can eat it warm, you can eat it cold, but it's ready to go in a deli case for Moon Lake Market.
Well, you've got some very creative sandwiches, because I'm looking here at your menu, and your turkey sandwich has ginger, soy cabbage slaw. So I can see that your heritage is being integrated into this particular sandwich.
Yeah. When I first started, my motto was New Authentic American. And that sounds kind of stuffy, but really, even here in Montana, away from the coastal lines and all these foodie cultures, I feel like folks like food that tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really care, you know, like the turkey sandwich has to have mustard and mayo. The turkey sandwich actually is one of my most popular items.
Really?
And people really compliment me on that soy ginger slaw.
It's very different. It's not something that you would see, I would say, anywhere that I can think of.
Thanks. My secret in that slaw is also I use Japanese mayonnaise, Kewpie mayonnaise.
I love the little bottle.
I know, they're great. So I think that offers a little bit of different flavor too than the regular mayo. So I'm a big fan of that mayo.
Yeah, it's almost
back to my chocolate.
Creamier, or and it's not, I think it's not as sour.
It's called Kewpie mayonnaise, and as you kind of alluded to it, it comes in a really cute, very efficient squeeze bottle. And it's very Japanese when you get it. They have arrow on this inside label where you're supposed to peel it off. And you're supposed to peel it one direction. That type of thing just makes me smile every time because that's so Japanese to me that they want you to peel the inside label one way. The flavor is really rich. I think it's got more yolks in American mayonnaise, I believe. So, yeah, I really like it. I think it adds another depth to my flavors.
Yeah, I think so, too. And when you say American, as Americans, is that we have people from all over the world. And many people have had to put together food combinations just because of availability and because so much is available now. So now let's speak into Asano's kitchen and hear about the task in her workday.
My kitchen is right behind Moon Lake Market, which is on Main Street. It's attached to their building, and it was a really great opportunity for me to just step right into a kitchen that was fairly set up already. And I bought some equipment, but not a huge amount to start my business. But typical day, I start at 5. I get here, and I feed the sourdough to the exact amount that I'm going to use in mixing of the dough. And that typically takes between 4 and 5 hours. Between 5 and 9, I'm doing other things, from making the sandwiches and grain bowls.
So when you say feed your sourdough, does that mean just adding more water and more flour, or how does that work?
You can be pretty scientific. I've got it down two portions that I memorize now for my recipe. But in the beginning, I had to experiment with different ratios of flour to water to your old starter, which is the culture part that we were talking about earlier. So at night, I feed it at 100 grams of water, 100 grams of flour, 20 grams of the culture, and mix that up well and then set that overnight. And then that starter is fairly hungry by the morning, meaning that it's kind of flat. So I take that again and then feed it at a different ratio that has more food, and it becomes really active and wants to eat more by the time that 4 hour stretches over. And that's sort of the timing that's really important. In the morning, I feed it at a different ratio to go into my dough, and that really determines how the dough is going to turn out for the day.
And are you going with just ambient temperature?
I am, yeah. I'm a little bit limited in space for any type of proofer or any extra technology that would make my life easier. So, yeah, I'm going with ambient temperature. But I do have lots of tricks around my kitchen at this point, where to set it when it's cold, where to set it when it's hot, how much open air I should have in, you know, my kitchen. So I have learned to spoil my starter culture. While the sourdough is doing its thing, eating and fermenting a little bit, I make those bowls and get my deliveries ready. By 9:30, 10, I'm starting to mix the dough. And it takes me about hour and a half to get everything mixed up, which is perfect timing because I have to deliver everything by noon.
The sourdough starter is the heart of any bread baking operation that chooses to use it for the rising of their product. Once flour and water have been inoculated with yeasty microbes, they help reduce the carbon dioxide and acid that makes bread rise. That starter is the culture that holds the life of these microorganisms that become very happy and start working vigorously when fed with flour and water. This, however, means that for the starter to stay alive and healthy, it has to be fed.
When I do take some time off, like last fall, we went back to Japan to visit my family. Mm-hmm. And I did have a friend just take the sourdough home. And actually, my sourdough's name is Sue. So she's the real boss. I'm actually just the head dishwasher at Samurai Sue's.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, when I take a little break, I do have some help to keep it fresh and be ready for me to come back to work at some point.
Well, it actually is somewhat of the beauty of sourdough, because I remember reading about the Alaskan explorers. Explorers used to carry sourdough or a small amount of it under their armpit and keep it warm. It can go somewhat dormant for a little bit. And once you start feeding it and giving it its comfortable environment, it comes back to life.
Exactly. I actually have several emergency stash hidden in the fridge and in the freezer as well at various stages. So if all else fails, I have some good culture I can nurture back to life.
So your sourdough bread, you said it has other ingredients in it or other flours. What else is in there?
So my traditional sourdough, like the country loaf and the baguette, it's just really flour, water, salt. That's it.
Okay.
I use Red Lodge water. I let it sit out to get the chlorine out. The ciabatta gets a little extra and gets olive oil.
Asano now talks about the bread that reminds me of my childhood.
The shokupan is actually the most complicated for me to make, but I love it. And that gets enriched with butter, whole milk, and a little bit of good organic sugar.
Well, I'm going to describe a little bit to the listeners what that shokupan looks like. It is like this perfect rectangular box, and it is Wonder Bread in its finest form and flavor. And I use Wonder Bread only because it has that childhood memory, and I don't believe they are the same beast, because your bread is so much more elegant. It's light, it's fluffy, it has a good sweetness to it. And I love toasting it, because when it toasts, it just has that sweet, kind of almost edgy of caramely smell that floats into the air. So my question to you is, how do you get that perfect loaf? What goes into making this bread?
So shokupan in Japanese, shoku is eat, and pan, I'm sure it derives from French or Spanish. So it's literally translated, it's eat bread or food bread.
I love it.
It's really versatile. It's used a lot for sandwiches in Japan. You can get these really awesome, and you talked about wild, unimaginable combinations for sandwiches that I'm creating. Talk about that in Japan. You can get all kinds of really crazy, delicious sandwiches that are delicately cut, like the English cucumber sandwich style size. Mm-hmm. But you would have like pork cutlet in there or something. You know, katsando. So those are all made with shokupan. The way I make shokupan, I make the starter night before, so it develops flavor overnight. And that's my culture with milk and flour, and ferments that wonderful flavor. In the morning, I take that super fortified culture and mix it with flour, sugar, egg white, more butter, more milk, and it sits overnight again. So it's like a 3-day process. Yeah, and then next day, I take it out and measure it out portions and put it in this square pan with a lid. It's called a pullman loaf, and that's how you get the shape. It proofs right up to the edge before I put it in the oven. It takes another probably about 4 to 6 hours, I'd say, once I measure out the dough and roll it in there. I slide the tin on there and then bake it. And while it's baking, it just that texture that you described, sort of like Wonder Bread-like, nice, squishy kind of texture that bounced back to it almost. That's all because I bake it with the lid on.
So what inspired you to actually make this bread?
It definitely reminds me of being in Japan, because it's such a popular bread in Japan. But last fall, my husband Paul and I were visiting my parents. Mm-hmm. And we took our bicycles with us, and we toured all over the place. My parents trailed us in their car with our luggage. It was like amazing trip of a lifetime. But on that trip, my dad would make us coffee with milk and nice morning toast with locally bought shokupan toast in the morning. Like every morning, that was his routine. He'd get up with us early, make us breakfast and send us off, and we meet up at the end of the day.
I love that shokupan also holds a dear place in Asano's heart. Come back to the second part of Flavors Under the Big Sky, where Asano gives us some hints for bread baking success. We then talk to 3 home bakers who baked bread for the first time during this COVID-19 pandemic. Welcome back to Flavors Under the Big Sky. On the phone, we continue to hear from Asano Otsu of Samurai Sue's Everyday Foods. She shares tips on successful bread baking.
Yeah, my hint would be that try to follow a recipe and fail. And don't get discouraged that you failed. Just think about what went wrong and then try it again. Get back on trying that again and do it a little differently and see if it would work next time. I really think experience gained by doing and making mistakes is invaluable. For every loaf of bread that I was happy with in the beginning, there were two or three that I was like, wow, what happened here? Or what happened to this batch of dough that I made? So through that trial and error, I really learned how to sort of persevere. Also, weighing out your ingredients is a huge learning curve that helped me become better. It's a little bit more precise, and I think you have more leeway in being flexible with your water amount, which influences your bread so much by being really precise. When you measure a cup of water, your eye level, it can lie to you all the time. But when you measure 100 grams of water, it's always 100 grams. Mm-hmm.
From Asano Otsu, we now talk to three local Billings cooks. General Manager Ken Sieber and I reviewed photos from Facebook and selected three. We begin with Ann Jackson Eaton, who enticed us with her photo of focaccia decorated to look like a flower garden with chives, cherry tomatoes, red onion, and celery leaves. Ann shares.
You know, breads are definitely one of those things that I pushed off in learning in cooking. And so it was just a really good time for me to do that right now. You know, it's always a little scary, worried about the yeast and rising and failures and that, but it went beautifully and smoothly. You followed directions and it just worked really nice.
Where did your recipe come from?
I blended actually a couple off the internet. One was a Food Network one, and another was an Italian cook that a little bit more oil in it. And I thought that would be better.
Focaccia is a flatbread that is pushed into a pan and then...
You do those little dimples, and it's a really soft, elastic dough. It just has a really nice texture to it when you work with it. And it was really fun to kind of just push it out into the edges and dimple it. And then I just pulled out stuff that I had from the refrigerator and, you know, actually seedlings and stuff that I was working with. And actually used some celery leaves because I had... Found stuff that I thought, and green onions that were propagating in my windowsill, and just kind of found stuff. And I was a little worried that a lot of those would just be really pretty and not taste that great. But honestly, I should have put more on because it tasted so great.
With newfound confidence, Anne baked up even more goodies.
I've done hamburger rolls. I did French rolls, pizza dough that was just unbelievable. I want to do sourdough, but I don't have a starter yet.
I brought over a starter nourished and nurtured by my husband to Anne and await what she bakes up. Now we talk to Sarah James, who lured us with her photo of pretzel buns filled with chorizo and mozzarella cheese. Sarah tells us why she started her baking adventure with these buns.
I actually launched into the pretzel buns because we made some empanadas. And that was just a Costco Connections recipe that I'd had from, gosh, maybe last fall. And I just kept looking at it going, I really like the idea of just being able to put stuff into a pocket. My husband is from Butte, and so pasties are a regular part of his family culture and the way they get together. Everybody's making pasties. So the empanadas came about, and then I said, I'm going to look for some recipes maybe that incorporate other things getting stuffed into something.
I applauded Sarah for starting her baking adventure with pretzels, because not only do you have to make the dough, but the dough is divided up, stuffed, boiled, and then baked.
It is a very time-consuming process because you have to proof everything, and then once you have your bun rolls, you quickly have to work through about 12 to 15 of them, flatten them out, put everything inside, seal it shut. Working with 3 to 5 at a time, because you don't want too many in your baking soda bath. You have to get them in there, watch them, roll them over, get them out, put them on a baking tray into your preheated oven. And my idea of pretzel cooking is different because when I was growing up, my mom always made alphabet pretzels.
Oh.
And they just became like this honey golden brown color. But my husband's mom makes pretzel twists.
and she does a darker brown. So I was kind of going in between those colors, and my family ate them all within 2 days.
Well, they look incredible. From the photo, I thought they looked more of an auburn color and just had that nice sheen to it. And I think I saw maybe some oozing of a little cheese here and there, but they look delectable. And why did you choose mozzarella and chorizo to stuff in?
It's actually a recipe from Jess Pryles, and she is a meat host, but it was something that I had gone from maybe a gift basket. Somebody had given me some information, and her recipe was actually the chorizo and mozzarella stuffed throughout the month.
Now that you have experienced this, again, I think you chose one of the harder recipes to start with. What are some of your hints to the listeners?
Don't be afraid of yeast, but do use fresh yeast.
We now talk to John Pierce, who executed perhaps the most popular bread recipe found online.
One of my twin boys, who's a doctor up in Missoula, and he was telling me about the term is no-knead bread, K-N-E-A-D. And I'd never heard it before, and I'm such a novice. I'm best friends with Betty Crocker and her blueberry muffins out of the box. And so that's about the extent of my baking abilities. But he said, hey, yeah, you got to check it out. Go on YouTube, which I did, and found the first recipe on no-knead bread. Her name is Jenny Can Cook. And that's where the recipe I found and watched. You just get your laptop and get Jenny on the counter and play the video and follow the instructions. And the end result is so darn good, and it's so easy, and it's fun, and it was fast, and it was rewarding, and fills the house full of the odor of fresh bread.
So how many loaves have you made? So you had this, you know, the way I found you was through Facebook. I did ask about recipes and then inquired about people making bread. But you had this incredible round loaf of bread that was golden in color, and it had that crackly looking shell on the outside. So describe it. What was it? Crunchy on the outside and soft and chewy in the middle and all that. You take it.
You are right on, but I'll repeat what you just said. So, and if you don't mind, I'll go through it real quick because it's so darn simple. It's almost laughable, but 2 cups of flour, 1/4 teaspoon of any kind of yeast, 1 teaspoon of sugar. You mix it all together. Finally, then you put in 1.5 cups of extra hot water, not boiling. Cover it in plastic for 3, 4, 5 hours. Let it proof, I guess is a word that I've learned.
Yes.
And then after it's proofed for the 3 or 4 or 5 hours, you bring it out, roll it in some flour, cover it in, actually they use parchment paper, and you heat the oven to 450 degrees, lay it on in parchment paper, which is inside of a Dutch oven. So then you put it in the oven at 450 in this Dutch oven covered for 30 minutes and it bakes. And you take it out, take the lid off, put the Dutch oven back in there with the lid off for 10 or 15 minutes, and that's what gives you that brown, crackly crust. I've made maybe 6-8 loaves of it so far, given some away. I've been told by my wife to quit making it.
Knowing John, I am believing he is still baking up a storm. Samurai Sue's sourdough breads can be procured through the Yellowstone Valley Food Hub on Thursdays in Billings and Red Lodge. Order online by Tuesday evenings. As Asana Otsu said, there was a silver lining during this COVID-19 pandemic. The love of eating and baking bread rose back into our lives. Music for Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region, has been provided by Parker Brown. Additional funding comes from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanians. Thanks to you, listeners, for your support. I'm Stella Fong.